Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 19th of August. Our guest this hour has written extensively about pensions, public pensions and private pensions, but we'll concentrate this hour on public pensions. She writes, the Detroit bankruptcy has raised concerns about the future of state and municipal pensions. When pensions are severely underfunded and states or municipalities fall on hard times, either the taxpayer or retirees pay the price. Paying benefits might mean reducing other services like education, or cutting the benefits of existing or soon-to-be retirees who made large contributions to these plans for decades and budgeted their retirement around what they have been promised. Our guest this hour is Allison Schrager, economist and writer. She writes regularly for Quartz, and we'll be looking at pensions and welcoming your phone calls. We're focusing on public pensions, but a lot has happened in the whole pension field with people losing their pensions. So I'm interested in what your thoughts are about all of this. Do you feel safe with a pension if you have one? Do you feel a little slightly insecure? Have you had an experience where you've lost one? What are the concerns you think that Detroit bankruptcy raises about the future of state and municipal pensions? Wisconsin, it's my understanding, is in pretty good shape. We'll ask her about that, but other states may not be as fortunate. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Allison is joining us from the NPR studios in New York City, and thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Why don't we start with Detroit, Allison, and please give me an indication of what's happened with pensions. What happens immediately when a city declares that it's bankrupt?
Well, immediately with the pensions, they still have a fair bit of assets, billions of dollars, so they can continue to pay current retirees for, you know, probably at least a decade. The problem is the way the GASB accounting standards allow them to really understate the extent of the liabilities. So the concern is that there won't be money there for current workers when they retire. And the bankruptcy adds another twist to it because usually you rely on the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. I think that's the explicit assumption to right. bail you out if you run out, but it's not clear the tax base is going to be there. Also, the rights are now, I always took it as certain that the fact that the state guaranteed the benefits meant that you would get the benefits, and I think everyone took them that way. But now every lawyer I speak to says, well, that might not be the case, and sort of the priority of pensioners in bankruptcy is going to be established.
Hmm. When you look at the way pensions have been funded, and I'm sure it's different state by state, but I would imagine a lot of these funds have been fairly conservatively invested, have they not?
It really depends on the state, but often no.
Really?
And you can't make a generalization across every state's different. But up until the 90s, most states did invest in very conservative investments. But in the hope to chase more yield, because you can pay for the liabilities another way, which is you can invest in riskier assets. Riskier assets pay more on average, but the risks are larger. So there's a temptation in the 90s, rather than to put more money into the pensions, to invest in riskier assets and hope that that would make up the difference.
You have written about Detroit police and firemen. Is their situation somewhat different because they don't get Social Security funds?
Yeah, it's a lot more dire because with other employees, you know, if worse comes to worse, you get Social Security, which isn't a great lifestyle in retirement, but it's not poverty either. The police and firemen, one, retire much younger, in their 50s, and if they don't have their pension to count on, they don't have anything to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. So what have they been saying in Detroit about this? How underfunded do they believe their plans are? You've also written that there are some who claim the pension is 96% funded. There are some who say it's only 77% funded. What's the truth?
Well, the 77% number, I don't really understand exactly how that that was calculated. That was the Milman report, and I don't really understand all their assumptions. But the 96% number is probably unrealistic. Because what you do when you figure out how funded a pension is, let's just suppose you assume the pension's not going to incur any new promises, is you take the amount of assets you have right now and what you could sell them for, and you take the ratio of that to the benefits you have to pay out. But the benefits you pay out, you don't just sum those up. You discount them at some rate of return, because a dollar today isn't a dollar in 10 years. Presumably, you could invest it and earn something with that. So the point of contention is, how do you value that $1 20 years from now, 10 years from now? And what the actuaries do in Detroit is they discount it at the rate of return they expect their assets to earn. And so the higher that is, the smaller the liability is, which gives them an incentive to invest in very risky assets. But financial economists would say that's wrong, because what you have to discount it at is the cost of providing that. So if these benefits are guaranteed, you have to provide them in every state of the world. It's sort of like insurance. It makes sure that you get something no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. And you pay a premium for that. So the way they're discounting it, they're assuming that premium is for free.
You have written about the fact that, and I'm sure this must be true of most states, that pension guarantees are part of the state constitution. They are in Detroit, in Michigan, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But does that make this, does that add something to this whole equation, this whole conversation, or does that become somewhat meaningless if you don't, if you can't fund it?
Well, we're going to see. This hasn't really come up, except for, I guess, in California, they ran into this problem. But in the end, the CalPERS program bailed it out. But in Rhode Island, when they ran out of money, pensioners had to take very large haircuts on their expected benefit. Hmm. Up until recently, we thought that guarantee meant something. But now it's really not so obvious. And what we'll probably see in the bankruptcy is where the pensioners fall relative to municipal bondholders or other creditors.
How long have we lived in an era where being paid benefits was assumed to be a certainty and you counted on it that a fraction of your final salary would be coming to you when you retired and it would increase with inflation and, by golly, you'd get it every year until you were dead?
Well, I guess for decades up until recently, certainly for the public plans, for the private plans, I think that realization has come a little bit sooner. Certainly in the 80s, in the late 70s with ERISA, people having to recognize, well, you know, these maybe corporations weren't as long, didn't have the stability as states, so they had to recognize it. They also have, or all this private plans are also insured by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the future, it must be a big if, too. You really have no idea where the economy is going to be in the future, do you? So you don't have any idea whether those assets are going to be earning a substantial amount of return.
Yeah, and that's the concern, is when they say 96% funded for Detroit, they have to assume they're going to get, I think it's 7.8% return on their assets every year from now for decades. And I think that's a really big assumption.
How many other states are in similar circumstances, or municipalities? Are you seeing a growing number of them?
Well, there's different issues. I mean, Detroit, you know, is using the shockingly bad accounting, but so are most people. So I think you can divide it into different categories, which is, you know, municipalities like Chicago, where their pension fund's in trouble, but the city is doing okay. And so then you can have the question of, are we going to rely on the taxpayers? Are we going to cut on other services to fill up the gap? As opposed to Detroit, maybe their pension fund isn't as underfunded as others. I mean, they're all underfunded, but maybe not relative to others. But the problem is, the municipality is bankrupt, so there's no backstop there.
Right. And when it comes to a choice between cutting benefits or cutting services, which way have municipalities or states decided to go more frequently?
Well, it hasn't happened very often. You know, in Rhode Island, they cut the benefits. And I think there's a place in Arkansas, the names escape me, where they cut the services.
So what do you think obviously this will have implications for other state pensions, and it almost sounds like people haven't figured out what would happen if times got really bad. What would you do about the pensions? Have people sat around the table and thought about long-term implications here, or is this part of the problem that they didn't?
I don't think they have at all. I mean, as I said, this was the exact problem with these accounting standards, is using that 8% return and assuming you're going to get it forever is the exact problem that we're now facing that no one really thought about.
It's kind of hard to believe they didn't think about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is why we've been wringing our hands about this for a while.
Mm-hmm. Would it make sense for... I don't know if this was somebody you talked to who suggested this or you suggested this. Ideally, everybody sharing some of the burden once states and municipalities recognize the cost of the pensions they promised, they'll know if they can continue to provide them. Is that indeed what would be most fair, for everybody to share some of the burden?
Yeah, and ideally sooner rather than later, because the sooner you address it and use reasonable accounting standards, the sooner you can fill in these gaps and the burden can be shared more equitably. Right now, say if Detroit just ignores the problem and just continues to pay benefits thinking they're 96% funded, then current Detroit firemen, anyway, they're paying a lot of, say, contributions in and not getting Social Security, are going to get left holding the bag. And who knows what the municipality of Detroit's going to look like in 10 or 15 years if they're going to have any tax base. So the sooner you can recognize the benefit, sort of the true funding state, and share and sort of do benefit cuts appropriately to the retirees, to current benefits, or raise taxes or issue bonds to pay off the difference, the mm-hmm. sooner, the better.
And you know, I'm sure it doesn't make many of those firefighters and police officers any less upset about this. They figured they had a deal. It was a bargain. They put aside all of this money. They were to be mm-hmm. paid this. And they're going to be retired for a long period of time, right? So it's hard to get over, I'm sure, what must be legitimate anger about getting a bum deal.
Yeah, it is a bum deal for them. They were really promised something that was never really sustainable or realistic to begin with, but they were promised it. And, you know, they worked very hard at a very dangerous job for many years and have put a lot of their own savings into this.
So where does this go now? Are there court challenges to this? Is there just discussion about what will happen with these workers, or what's the status?
Well, I'm not sure. I imagine there's going to be a lot of legal battles going through for the next couple of years. I mean, it could go really all the way to the Supreme Court, and it really brings up a lot of issues about federal bankruptcy versus state guarantees, and all of this is going to be decided, and I think it's really going to change the whole landscape for public pensions, because as you point out, we kind of just went along with this for years, not really even thinking through, were these guarantees realistic? Could the states really guarantee this? And, you know, we've always just assumed yes, but that probably wasn't a good assumption, and we're now going to find out.
We welcome phone calls for Allison. Allison Schrager is our guest this hour. She's an economist and writer who writes regularly for Quartz. And we're looking at the state of Detroit's public pensions, which is a very sad situation right now. Many benefits, she writes, are guaranteed by the state constitution. Being paid benefits, you know, seemed to be pretty much a certainty when it came to public pensions. But, of course, that was true for people who had private pensions as well. And look how many of those completely disappeared, which is a hard thing to take when you've counted on that in your life. But she believes that because we haven't really sat down and looked at whether or not we can afford these benefits well into the future, that what is happening in Detroit ought to make everybody in other states and municipalities sit up and take notice. What do you think? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're concentrating on public pensions because of what's happening in Detroit, but I'm sure some of you have stories about your own pensions. You can talk about whether or not we have not had a long-range discussion about how safe these are, how certain these are, and what would happen if there were a bad financial turn and the benefits weren't at all what the people who were supposed to be getting them were expecting. To your phone calls momentarily, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Allison Schrager, economist and writer who writes regularly for Quartz, is our guest, and we're going to phone calls now, 800-486-8655. Charlie in Milwaukee is our first caller. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Kathleen. You have a great show, always fair and balanced. Love to listen to it. My comment was the following. Before I moved back to Wisconsin, I worked for the state of Illinois, and I had a pension or a retirement package that I couldn't believe. Well, it turns out that, as with most things that are too good to be true, this one is probably not going to happen because Illinois is broke. A friend told me that, who worked for the state government, also said it's not going to last. It's unsustainable. And in terms of Detroit, we're seeing what happens when people fail to make the tough choices. They promise people and everything, and we elect the wrong people who are afraid to lead. I think Detroit has to live with its own problems because it's their problems.
So what's happening, Charlie, with your pension? Will you get one? Just cut back?
No, I have my own business. I got out as soon as I could. I left the state when I realized that it wasn't, with the pension, was going to fail. I said, well, I can make more money and have a better life elsewhere.
Right.
So I left the job. I said the pension made it worthwhile. The retirement benefits are phenomenal. But I also realized with the way the state was going, I said, it's not going to be there when I retire. I'm in my early 40s. So, I mean, 20 years down the road, it's just not going to be there. They're not going to be able to do what they said that they were going to do.
Allison, is that true? Charlie won't get any of that money?
Well, I mean, it would be rather shocking if people get none of that money. And ideally, as well, what I'd expect would happen, and, it's going to vary a lot from municipality to municipality and, what the tax base is and what services the electorate is willing to have cut, is probably something will be available. But, the problem, defined benefit plans are always assumed to be risk-free, but there are all these hidden risks which you really can't hedge. And that's the problem, is that there's just a lot of uncertainty around it.
So what is the difference? I know you've been looking at Detroit, but we hear that in Wisconsin there's maybe a different plan, and I haven't heard a whole lot of talk in this state of public pensions being in jeopardy. Do you know what some states are doing right, comparing them with other states that are doing things wrong?
Well, all states are doing a variety of things wrong. I would say actually Wisconsin is probably doing more right than a lot of other states. And that at least if you read your financial reports, there's a lot of discussion about risk sharing, and some risk sharing is explicitly put on Wisconsin public retirees. And that how so your pension benefit in most states is indexed with inflation. But in Wisconsin, if it depends on how well the fund performs, how much of the indexation benefit you actually get.
I see.
And that means that Wisconsin retirees actually bear a lot of the investment risk. Actually, it's a little strange because usually you want retirees to bear investment risk while you're saving, not after you've retired. And Wisconsin does the opposite in that retirees only really bear the risk once they've retired. But it's a huge step in the right direction. And, the fact that your trustees have taken this on and are having, some discussion about it is really to be commended.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Charlie, for your call. Do you want any more comments you want to make about Illinois, what Illinois is facing, before we go back to phone calls, Allison?
No.
Okay. Deb and Galena, hi.
Hi. My husband and I are both retired teachers. He's from Illinois. It's my understanding that our teachers' retirement system was solvent. The problem came up when, of course, the state did not fund their portion of our retirement as promised. And not only did they not fund their portion, but they withdrew monies from that. So now what they're doing is they have a committee that is supposedly deciding our fate. We do not get Social Security, just like the public servants you were talking about prior to this. And it's real frustrating, that they have our futures in their hands when, we didn't really see this coming down the pike because our retirements are supposedly constitutionally also promised to us. And then the other thing that is frustrating is the state is talking about things like building a new large airport in Teotone and funding that, and yet they won't, you know, fund our portion that was promised to retirement. And I wondered if your guests would just comment on that, keeping in mind that the Chicago school system pension is a separate pension system from the rest of us in the state.
Okay. Thank
you. I'll take
Yeah, I just wanted to know from you. So what is your situation now? Has your, have your retirement payments been forthcoming? Are you getting what you should and you're just worried about what will happen? Or what's your current status?
Yeah, our retirement payments are coming right now. Our increases, you know, are coming when they're supposed to. But, you know, the legislature has put off any decision and finally now selected a committee to decide this. So, you know, my husband and I are not Medicare age yet, so we're just kind of hoping that, you know, maybe the TRS or someone will bring a lawsuit to assure this, since it's constitutionally protected, supposedly, or that we'll reach Medicare age, maybe, so that we won't have quite as big a worry about, you know, some of the health and insurance issues.
Exactly. Well, Allison.
Yeah, well, I mean, this just shows, you know, these inherent, you know, bad incentives that it sets up for politicians who are often very short-sighted but are making very long-term obligations. I mean, in some ways, defined benefit plans make a lot of sense for states and for retirees in that you can pool the risks across generations and, you know, somewhat onto the taxpayer. But the problem is it doesn't mix well when you have politicians who are inherently very short-term focused. And, you know, this is going to be a huge issue and as well, thinking about how do we prioritize, you know, current social benefits versus retiree benefits and, you know, how are we going to prioritize them?
And why is it that it's the case with Detroit and also with teachers in Illinois that they don't get Social Security?
Well, I think that was just a legacy for when Social Security started, that not all employees, not all people participated in it, and just it worked out that way. Now most people do get Social Security, and if they're state employees. But it's sort of the legacy costs tend to go on with firefighters, policemen, and often teachers. I suspect often because they retire earlier, and Social Security doesn't start till when you're 62.
I see. An email from Dave in Madison. Can you envision any scenario under which the federal civil service retirement system could renege on its pension obligations to current or future retirees?
Well, it depends what we mean by renege. I mean, if people get zero, that I find that really unlikely turn of events. But, you know, benefit cuts maybe are always on the table.
Deb, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Jack in Grays Lake. Hi, Jack.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a couple observations of the Illinois teachers retirement system. And when one looks at the matrix of where you start out with a BS in education and no years of experience, that top left column is about $27,000. And then if I continue on and gain my master's and PhD and extra credits, on that bottom right, it's $116,000. And this is in one particular district, one of the top five in the state. I understand they all aren't like that, but where can you get four times the amount of money for a particular job from 1 year to 20? The other question I have or observation, it looks like it's almost like a Ponzi scheme in that, the people who are there the longest get the highest benefit, and those who are now starting the system, like your previous caller, are scared because they're not going to get any benefits. And then the final comment is it looks like each individual school district is an oligopoly in that they want to retain the best teachers and they're individually fighting one another and upping the ante, and the people who get on the hook are really going to be the taxpayers of Illinois. I'll let you comment on that, and I'll listen to it offline.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for the call.
Well, you bring up a really good point that, you know, often with being a state employee, the benefit isn't just the salary you have and the promised benefits, but it's the certainty which you're supposed to have around those, which is you have very stable employment and that you get these benefits, you know, especially compared to the private sector, we always thought with such certainty. And the problem is that we never really priced in that certainty. And now that there are problems, we're seeing that we're realizing the cost of that.
I think what he said about the teaching profession in Illinois is very true, that the salaries, there's a huge difference between mm-hmm. what different districts will pay. And so I would imagine that it also affects their retirement benefits too, right?
Yeah, because these retirement benefits are a function of your salary. So typically what you get is you take, you know, your average last three years of salary, which are higher because your salary usually goes up over time, and you get some fraction of that times the number of years you've worked there. So the more years you've been there, you can get a replacement rate. So if you retired making $150,000, you can get like 80% of that when you retire. Hmm.
What about his comments concerning those who are entering that kind of a profession right now? Or if you wanted to be, if Detroit needs firefighters and police, what does it do to people who would be entering the profession? Is it pretty much up in the air what their benefits may be?
I imagine, yeah, because now they're starting to recognize the uncertainty, and it will be interesting to see if employees in those areas would prefer to have more defined contribution plans where, you know, they are fully funded by definition by the employer-employee by right away, and the employee actually owns those assets from the beginning. And there's a lot of risks in those too, but at least they're explicit and well understood.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Jack, for your call. Let's go to Lori next in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I was calling because I'm interested in your conversation, both looking at Detroit's situation and Illinois. They not only have these large, unsustainable retirement programs and debt, but now that their debt is so large, their credit levels have been downgraded. And that just means higher interest, just like an individual. And so unless these cities and states become financially sound, they're going to have such increase on this debt that they're not going to be able – they can't do what they owe now, let alone down the road. And they have no choice but to pass that on to the taxpayer or cut substantially.
Allison.
Yeah, that's precisely the problem. Which is, actuaries have always justified the way states do their accounting, that you can just assume you're going to get your expected return every year by the fact that, well, these plans have very long lifespans and that we can always rely on the taxpayer. So if we don't get it some years, we can always raise debt or raise taxes. But now we're seeing that that might not be there. And it's much more expensive to raise debt on hard times if you're a city that's not in good financial shape. And that's why using an 8% discount rate is so inappropriate, because in no way accounts for all the things you just brought up.
Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for the call. So how do you make things let's go back to those people who are just entering these professions. It's lodging in my mind for some reason. What can you do when you're formulating a plan for those people right now? What's a better way to go?
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of defined contributions like 401k-style plans, which everyone has in the private sector. They definitely have their problems, but most of their problems are associated with people not saving enough into them or not being offered good investment choices or investment choices that are really expensive. But there's no reason that has to always be the case. I mean, as I said, the state employees have been contributing a lot of money into their pensions, and if they were to put those into a defined contribution plan and had sensible and low-cost investment choices, then they could get a really good retirement from that too, and all the risk would be apparent. They can account for it. They can plan around it. They can integrate it with Social Security and plan around it and have, you know, maybe more uncertainty in some ways, but at least it will all be very transparent.
What is the uncertainty?
Well, with a defined benefit plan, as we always thought, you would get some fraction of your salary for certain when you retired, and you would get it every year of retirement until you died, and that was for sure, and that was very nice. As opposed to a defined contribution plan, you put money into this account, it earns whatever the market earns, and then you retire with this big pile of money and you have to figure out what to do with it. Maybe you'll buy an annuity that will make you those payments. Maybe you'll try to spend it down yourself. So there's a lot of risk in that, but at least it's very transparent. It's clear. Every time you see your 401k statement, you know exactly where you stand.
How much more risk?
Well, it's hard to quantify. It depends really on the defined benefit plan and how well funded it is versus a defined contribution plan and how it's invested and, you know, how well it's financed.
We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our conversation prompted because of what happened in Detroit, the bankruptcy raising concerns in that community, in that city, about the future of state and municipal pensions. And, of course, we're hearing from listeners, particularly in Illinois, where they've had some similar problems, that this may be something that other communities will be facing, and we need to pay attention to Detroit, that we have failed to look at what might happen with these systems on a long-term basis, even though there's a constitutional benefit guarantee that it's not always possible to live up to your obligation because of lack of money, to put it in a nutshell. So what about state pension funding? And what about whether or not this is the way to go, or as our guest suggested, that maybe we need a 401k style of program? When you do have a situation like a city going bankrupt, what do you do in terms of reducing other services or cutting the benefits back substantially of what those who were beneficiaries of this were likely to get and had planned on getting for their lives? What's fair? How can you fund the program, and how much money is there, too? That's, of course, up for debate in Detroit right now. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to use that, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be discussing a new book about foster care in America titled To the End of June, The Intimate Life of American Foster Care. Our guest this hour is Allison Schrager. She's an economist and writer and writes regularly for Quartz. And our phone number, 800-486-8655. Ruth in Madison, hi.
Hi, thank you. And I'm a retiree on the state benefit plan. And what I'd like to say is that the big difference to me between a defined contribution and a defined benefit plan is that you can outlive a defined contribution. And that says you're approaching your 99th birthday and you're watching your money dwindle, and it spends awful fast toward the end there. Whereas in a defined contribution, a defined benefit plan, you don't own your money. So if you die young, your heirs do not inherit it, but the people who outlive their contributions then can use that money. And that's what we have in Wisconsin. And we do not have one single penny of taxpayer dollars going to the pension. That's all our deferred wages. They used to call it the state's share because they could avoid Social Security, paying Social Security FICA taxes on that if it was non-wage compensation. But it was 100% contribution from the employee in actuality. So it's outliving the pension. Please explain.
Thank you, Ruth.
That is a big problem with defined contribution plans, although you can always buy an annuity from an insurance company and they will make those same payments, and you can have it make payments for life. You can have it increase with inflation. You know, these are all options. You just have to pay for them.
Are there a lot of people, do you think, who have, when she talked about running out of money being 99, mm-hmm. I would imagine some people would run out of money before that. Is that a substantial problem because people didn't buy these other kinds of plans with people who are on the plan that you outlined?
I reckon it's going to be more and more because right now most people who are retiring haven't had that many years with a defined contribution plan. So we're definitely going to see more and more cases because we have there's no explicit, you know, law that encourages people to annuitize at all. Anyway, that's the only real way to hedge living your assets. To some degree, Social Security provides some backstop that you'll always get something because that's an annuity that pays until you die. But it probably will become more of an issue because annuities aren't very popular, but they're the only way to ensure that your assets will last your entire lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ruth, very much for the call. Let's go to Linda in Port Washington. Hi.
Good afternoon. I am a beneficiary of the Wisconsin retirement system, and I didn't hear your whole program, but I've heard most comments in regard to Illinois and Michigan. I wondered what your guest, what her feeling was about Wisconsin, because we do have several checks in place. For example, when our fund lost money in 2007, 2008, or 2007 and 2008, those of us who were in the fixed portion of it, there's a five-year averaging. And during that 5 years, the loss that they experienced is spread out. Those who were in the variable, which at one time could be up to 50% of your contribution, they had some really big hits of 25%, 30%, but they've also made a good portion of it back. You have a base pay that takes effect when you retire. In my case, I became disabled and didn't even know there was that benefit out there. And it can't go lower than that. But, and when there's increases in the market, you only get a portion of that. So from every expert that I've read on Wisconsin's system, we have one of the best in the nation. And it is, as they say, fully funded. And the previous caller who was concerned about if you die, well, that's like Social Security. If you die young, well, that money helps to pay for other people. And in teaching, which I'm in, it's a number of individuals that is unlikely to go down as far as new people paying into it, unlike a lot of other industries. But, so those are just some of my comments.
Thank you, Linda.
I agree that Wisconsin probably, of all the states, it probably has the best system in that they said there's this explicit risk sharing that if the core fund or the annuity fund doesn't return what more than 5%, that, you know, you don't get the full indexation, or if it's well above it, you'll get more inflation indexation. And I was reading an estimate that the benefit of that could be translated into an extra 10% of contributions of payroll a year. I mean, so that's a very large benefit. And It's really heartening that if you read Wisconsin's financial reports, sort of the very frank discussions about risk, I really haven't seen anywhere else. I mean, there are some problems in that when you say you're fully funded, again, you're using, I think, a 7.2% discount rate, which, again, doesn't really fully address all the risks out there, but it's definitely a huge step in the right direction and seems to be more than what other states are doing.
Well, I wonder why we did this and other people didn't.
I don't know. I mean, more states definitely should, and I imagine more will start looking to Wisconsin's model because it's a really – I mean, the one concern I have about it is that it puts a lot of risk on current retirees versus you usually like to put more risk on current workers because they've got more years of, you know, wages and other things to sort of deal with that risk, and putting it all on current workers isn't normally advisable. But I imagine as more states come to grips with the promises they've made, you're going to see a lot more moving to something more like a Wisconsin model. Hmm. I once did a lot of work in the Netherlands, and this is exactly what Dutch pension plans do. It's the exact same thing, which is whether or not your pension benefit goes up with inflation is directly related to the health of your pension fund.
Hmm. Thanks, Linda, very much for your call. Number is 800-486-8655. Margaret in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I think you've had some good retired teacher spokesperson to give you some history of how we got here, and as to why Wisconsin did it. I think the people that instituted this took their time and really looked at the benefit for everybody versus just a few. But in that vein, you know, this really has become more of a political animal than an economic animal, because the marketplace cannot wait to get a hold of this money to put it into 401ks that then are subject to the big risks. And that very fact, I think, is one thing that is driving, like, oh, this is never going to work, this is never going to work, this would be better. It's very similar to the loan crises. Once the middle class and some races were tapped out, all of a sudden loans that would never have been secured previously were then put on the marketplace, and and they lost so much more than you had a program this morning discussing that very thing. This is similar to that. It's more of a political thing than an economic thing. It is to make sure that the middle class cannot count on anything, and that we're subject to the whims of rules that, once you apply the rules, then those in power and with money get to go in and change the rules without having it affect them but affect everybody else. So this is a well-laid plan. The more we talk about it in economic terms, it sounds very clean and precise, but there's really a lot of ill will that is going on behind the scenes.
Allison.
Well, it's disappointing that there is the ill will. Like I said, it's a really offers a great alternative. And is it just, honestly, the sort of recognizing that there's risk involved and thinking about different ways to share it is it. I really have not seen elsewhere, and it's very brave of your politicians to take that on. Because as you point out, I mean, there's all these risks inherent with the fine benefit plans we never think about, which is essentially with the governance of them and the political whims. I mean, as I said, in any way, 401k-style private plans have a lot of problems in terms of you being subject to market risk. At least those property rights are yours. But as I said, there's advantages and disadvantages to both. And, you know, as I said, this offers these hybrid plans. I mean, I think we'll learn more about them as more states have them, or some private companies as well do cash balance plans, which are different but in a similar spirit. We'll also see how they work.
She described this as a big risk program. Is that a fair description of this, or that it is a big risk? You are running a risk of losing everything if the stock market really collapses?
With a defined contribution plan?
Uh-huh.
Or with a Wisconsin plan?
With a defined contribution plan.
Well, it depends how it's invested. I mean, the probability that the stock market's going to completely collapse and, you know, no one's going to ever get anything again, I think we'll have bigger problems than our pensions. But it does leave individuals on the hook, as opposed to a defined benefit plan. If, you know, one person retires when markets are up, another person retires when markets are down, you can smooth across those two people. As opposed to with a defined contribution, you know, depending on when you retire, pretty much and how you invested determines your whole pension. And that's hard for the average person as well. It's a very, very hard and sophisticated financial problem to save enough and to invest it properly and then figure out what to do when you retire with it. But that doesn't mean defined contribution plans are necessarily bad. I mean, you just have to structure them better and offer sensible investment choices.
Thanks so much, Margaret, for the call. Nancy and Racine, hi.
Yeah, this is Nancy. I'm wondering, with all the charter schools and the voucher schools, I'm wondering if the number of people paying into the system is going to be reduced or has been reduced considerably in the last year or two.
Well, I sure don't know about that. Do you know about that, Allison?
No, I don't know. Although I do think that the Wisconsin plan is pretty. I said that if issues with the funding and the discount rate they use, but at least they're funded pretty well in terms of current contributions of active employees. So it's not like Social Security, where you're as dependent on current people paying in to finance the older people.
Yeah, and she's speaking specifically of some changes that are taking place in schools in Wisconsin. So teachers, voucher schools are going to private and religious schools, in more parts of the state. With charter schools, I know that many of them are under the purview of public schools. With voucher, with private schools and with religious schools, I have no idea what those retirement plans are. I wouldn't imagine that they were a part of, although I could be wrong about this, the Wisconsin retirement system, because they're not public employees. But maybe they are, because they're now getting public funds. So I don't know what the answer to that is, but I don't expect you to, because it's Wisconsin and it's new.
Yeah. But if you did have fewer people coming into the system, that doesn't necessarily spell the gloom that you would for Social Security, which is based on having the current people pay in. At least these plans are genuinely funded, and that if you froze them off from new entrants, they could still finance themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nancy, very much for your call. Todd in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I had a little bit of a work up to a question here, but one of the things that I've become aware of over the years is just how often it happens that the people that are managing the investment funds and that sort of thing are the same people who are being asked, or you have a bit of an incestuous relationship going on between, for instance, school boards and union representatives, and these school boards are frequently people who are came out of the teaching profession, and they're just basically working with their people that are also vested in the system, and the union representative who's working for the school system. And so you have this happening at a lot of different levels of government, not just school systems, but in departments of public works, et cetera, et cetera. So they're more or less just rewarding each other. You know, it's a rubber stamp, pretty much. You know, how much do you want? You want that much? Fine. And they wind up getting, you know, never hearing the word no, or even being questioned as to why somebody wants that much of an increase, and on it goes. And ultimately, you find yourself in this kind of a position. And what I'm wondering about is what percentage of the pension plans, for instance, in cities, et cetera, are just more or less going broke because of the result of this very thing, where you have this kind of a relationship going on, and also because you have people that are just saying, short term, let's just take money from the pension plan to pay our obligations, and we'll make it up somehow down the road. And that never happens, of course. So I wonder how much of a problem that is. And you know, finally, the one thing I think that you have to recognize in almost every one of these situations is, wherever this is happening, you'll find Democrats in control. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Allison.
Well, there's actually a great paper by the Cleveland Fed looking at these public plans and how actually Wisconsin's not does follow some best practices better than most states, but that often most state plans, I don't think there are official best practice standards, but if there were, that most states aren't following them at all. They said they have people on these pension boards who don't have a lot of investment experience and have people with lots of different vested interests. Again, you throw politicians into the mix. And this is why I feel so much for state workers, is often they would forego pay raises with the idea that their pension would be sweetened down the road. And then those promises were never sustainable. There was never adequate money put aside for that. And then they're left holding the bag, or the taxpayers are, or someone. But whoever made the promise isn't the one who does that.
He would lead us to believe from this call that there are a lot of shady deals going on here. You know, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. You need some money. We come from the same background. We'll make sure that that happens. Is that really the way things go? Or I would imagine that when you're looking at a retirement system for a state, that it might be a little more consideration going into the whole process.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much nefarious dealings going on. I think it's more just sort of short-termism or not really understanding financial market risk. I mean, probably does happen somewhere from time to time, but I think most people who, you know, are on these boards generally are trying to do the right thing. They might just not really appreciate what they're doing.
Mark in Madison, probably our last caller. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My question is in response to the guest's support for 401ks. And I see there's a big problem because of the issue with individual taking on all the risk of investment versus a larger system where risk, say investment risk, is spread across all participants. I don't have any statistics, but I would guess that individual investors without much experience make huge mistakes in their investing, and then with a large pile of money at retirement, they again make large mistakes with that money, whether they annuitize or not. Whereas the public plans at least put everyone in the same risk pool.
Mm-hmm. We have about 10 seconds. Allison?
Well, but and that's a really good point. But that just speaks to, you know, you can deal with that by offering people in 401k plans all sensible investment choices and trying to limit their choices to those or encouraging them through default choices.
Thanks so much for the call, Mark. And Allison, thank you for your time this hour.
Thank you.
Allison Schrager joining us from the NPR studios in New York. She's an economist and writer, writes regularly for Quartz, and we have put one of the articles that deals with the Detroit situation and the questions that we should all be thinking about as a result of what we learned from Detroit's bankruptcy. It's on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this program. Thanks for your active participation. We're with you again tomorrow, so stay with us. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.